From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Seattle Slough has four lengths on Run Dusty Run. It's Run Dusty Run in second and San Edmund third. They're nearing the finish line. It's still Seattle Slough, and he's opened it up to 4.5.
Easy Goer gets clear by 4. Sunday Silence remains in second. La Voyageur, the horse from France, is third. It's New York's Easy Goer in front.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
It's been 26 years. It's just one furlong away. Birdstone is an absurd threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Justify is still there. Justify from Gronkowski. He's just perfect. And now he's just immortal. Justify is the 13th Triple Crown winner.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Well, 2 weeks ago, I opened this program by saying happy Belmont Stakes Day. June 6th, of course, would have been the traditional placing of the Belmont. And the first leg of this year's Triple Crown had things actually remained as scheduled. Well, here we are. It's June 20th, and I once again get to say happy Belmont Stakes Day to everyone throughout HRN Nation. Good morning and welcome to the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have all of you tuning in across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, and all of you listening digitally. You're doing that on our website at horseracingradio.net. Well, the quote-unquote Triple Crown begins today, and for the first time in the history of the series, the Belmont is going to be run as the first leg. And as most of you know, the distance has been shortened this year from the demanding mile-and-a-half test of the champion to a mile-and-an-eighth. And keep in mind, at Belmont, that's a one-turn mile-and-an-eighth race. So a completely different type of Belmont Stakes than we're used to seeing. I've mentioned before that the Belmont has been run. This is not without precedent. The Belmont has been run at a mile and an eighth two other times in its history, but those were all the way back in 1893 and 1894, so hasn't happened in recent memory. Our exclusive radio coverage of the Belmont Stakes here on HRN begins at 4 o'clock Eastern today with a 30-minute broadcast of the Grade 1 Acorn. That broadcast brought to you by Breeders' Cup. And then at 4:30, we kick off our network coverage of the 152nd Belmont in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. And that portion of our coverage comes your way from 4:30 to 6 o'clock Eastern. It's presented by Red Brand Fence and Twin Spires. And looking forward to that coverage coming up later today. That show, by the way, at 4:30, also going to feature the Grade 1 Jiper, which is a win and you're in, for the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. And you're going to be able to listen to our wire-to-wire coverage on Sirius 219, XM 201, along with a multitude of affiliates across the country and on our website at horseracingradio.net. Well, the next 2 hours this morning, as you might expect on a Belmont Stakes morning, are loaded with Belmont conversation. And every segment of this show, jam-packed with an all-star lineup of guests. Ed DeRosa, as I call him, the Duke of Degeneracy, from Brisnet and Twin Spires, will handicap the Belmont and some of the other stakes races on this Belmont Day program. He's going to do that with me coming up after our first break at 8:15 Eastern, so about 10 minutes from right now. The voice of the Triple Crown, Larry Colmus, is going to be here at 8:35 Eastern. At 9 o'clock, you will hear our exclusive one-on-one interview with NYRA President and CEO David O'Rourke, who took time to sit down with our Anthony Stabile at Belmont yesterday afternoon. Some great things in that interview. You won't want to miss it, 9 o'clock Eastern. Trainer Doug O'Neill going to be here at 9:20 Eastern time to talk about his Belmont contender, Four Left. I know those words all too well. Four Left. 30-1 on the morning line for Doug's longtime owner, Paul Redham. The white and purple colors. You remember that team That's the same team that suffered the disappointment of having to scratch I'll Have Another the morning before his Triple Crown bid in 2012. I guess it would be somewhat apropos if Doug and Paul Redham were to get that Belmont win with four left, 30-1 on the morning line. But not without a shot. I don't think he's without a shot. And Doug will tell you why, 9:20 Eastern time. And I'm going to wrap up the show with New York native, horse owner, Breeders' Cup brand ambassador, and, oh, by the way, celebrity chef, Bobby Flay, as he shares some of his Belmont Day memories and looks ahead to this year's edition of the Belmont. Going to be a fun show. Plus, I'm going to bring you our Industry Star of the Week. That's a very special one this week, presented by Stuart Morris. And you'll hear what I consider to be one of the greatest moments in my nearly 20-year broadcasting career. And it's not what you might think. That comes up later in the program as well. Now, in terms of the storylines that jump out with this year's 10-horse Belmont Field, of course, Barkley Tag, Jack Knowlton, with the favorite Tis the Law. They're looking to get their Belmont win after coming up short with Funny Side in 2003. Here they are with another ultra-talented New York bred. Huge favorite on the morning line, Tis the Law. And he does look like the horse to beat. There's no doubt about it. But that's why they run the race. Todd Pletcher is in search of a fourth Belmont win. He joined me on this program last week to talk about his two contenders, Farmington Road and Dr. Post. You have Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott, still, he's been here for a little while now, still sitting on 4,999 career wins. Bill's going to have five chances to reach that 5,000 win milestone before he sends out Modernist in the Belmont Stakes. He has three horses entered at Churchill Downs. He has two horses entered before the Belmont in stakes races in Elmont, New York. Antoinette in the Wonder Again Stakes and Hidden Scroll in that Grade 1 Jiper, which is the race preceding the Belmont. But if he doesn't get it, he'd be looking for win number 5,000 in the Belmont. How cool would that be? It would be his second Belmont victory if he can pull it off, and it would be a special one, no doubt. Linda Rice. Linda would become the first female trainer to win the Belmont if Max Player can pull it off, and it's been quite a year for Linda. I mean, forget about the fact that this could be another feather in her cap and a tremendous milestone, but she is, forget about male, female, it doesn't matter. Linda Rice is a top trainer in this sport. Earlier this year, she became one of just three female trainers ever to saddle 2,000 winners. There are plenty of male trainers that would love to saddle 2,000 winners. And Linda is good as it gets. I mean, she really does a tremendous job. And Max Player going to be making his first start since early February in like 4.5 months. So this would be one heck of a training job if she can pull it off. And, you know, when he won the Withers in early February, that was another milestone for Linda. That was her 200th stakes victory. So she just continues to rack them up. And we'll see if she can pull it off and make some more history later today in the Belmont Stakes. You have two jockeys who are getting a leg up in their first Triple Crown race later today. You have 46-year-old Luca Panici, the Italian-born rider who has had a really good year, but it's been a challenging year for Luca. He's had to overcome injuries on a couple of different occasions, even losing his Triple Crown mounts because he was on the sidelines. But thankfully, the connections of Sole Volante are sticking with Luca, and he will get a chance to ride in the Belmont, his first Triple Crown race later this afternoon. You also have 23-year-old, exactly half the age of Luca, 23-year-old Raylu Gutierrez, who will be aboard Jungle Runner for Steve Asmussen. Native of Rochester, New York, which is about 5.5 hours northwest of Belmont Park. This is a dream come true for Raylu, and he was as surprised as anyone to hear that he was going to have the call aboard Jungle Runner. But he does, and Jungle Runner probably going to be the longest shot in the entire field. Doesn't matter to Raylu. He's pumped up to be aboard this horse later today. It'll be fun to see if somehow he can find a way to make an impact in this year's Belmont. So those are some of the storylines to keep an eye on. Again, our coverage 4 to 6 Eastern, 4 to 4:30 with the undercard. That includes the Grade 1 Acorn, brought to you by Breeders' Cup. 4:30 to 6 o'clock Eastern, our network coverage of the Belmont and the Grade 1 Jiper. And you can tune into that coverage, all of that coverage, by the way, Sirius 219, XM 201, and on a multitude of affiliates across the country. And you can stream us worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. So plenty of ways to listen to us. Our entire affiliate listing is up on our website right now at horseracingradio.net. So head on over there and check it out when you get a second, and find a station near you if you can't be tuned in to Sirius XM or to our streaming later today. Lots of ways to listen to the Belmont and that coverage at 4:30 presented by Twin Spires and by Red Brand Fence. Poll question today at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook is this: who is your pick to win today's Belmont? Pretty simple. Who is your pick to win today's Belmont Stakes? Going to give you four choices, technically three, but you can specify if you like somebody else. Tis the Law, Sole Volante, Tap It to Win, or Other. And if you choose Other, please let me know who that other horse be, what other horse you like outside of Tis the Law, Sole Volante, Tap It to Win. So that's it. Who is your pick to win today's Belmont Stakes? Head over there now at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. All right, I'm going to get to a break. When I come back, it's Ed DeRosa from Twin Spires and Briss. He'll kick it off. Busy morning on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust Keep Safe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about Keep Safe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care Products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
The Florida thoroughbred industry is celebrating 75 years with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. And what a successful 75 it has been. Florida breds have won 19 Triple Crown races, 52 national championships, while along the way making 170 racehorse millionaires and garnishing 66 Eclipse Awards. Most recently, Florida bred Starship Jubilee was named Canada's Horse of the Year. The FTBOA, celebrating 75 years. Join Florida for the next 25.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Bunny side has a narrow lead. Bobby Frankel's Derby deal will piece close to his inside. Empire Maker is giving it all. Bunny side trying to pull up. The upset here. 12-1 coming down to the line. Gutsy Gelding, Bunnyside, has won the 129th Kentucky
quarter to go at Pimlico. Funny Side has taken over and taken command in the Preakness. Funny Side down the stretch, three lengths clear. Now Scrimshaw trying to rally up outside, claiming second. Peace Rules, Midway Road is next, followed by New York Hero. And there's a furlong to go, and it's Funny Side. The courageous Funny Side is pulling away in a dominant performance. Two down, one to go. It's Funny Side destroying the field.
Well, that's the way it sounded in 2003. Tom Durkin and Dave Rodman with the calls of the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness Stakes, respectively. And Funny Side, as you remember, came up just a little bit short behind Empire Maker in the Belmont Stakes. He turned the table on his rival and denied him the Triple Crown. Today, Jack Knowlton, Barkley Tagg, that same Funny Side team, returned to Belmont Park looking for that elusive Belmont Stakes victory. And they come here with the favorite, Tis the Law, who looks like he's going to be a handful in this spot later this afternoon. We'll find out what Ed DeRosa has to say about that. He is with Twin Spires and Brisnet, and he is with me now here on HRRN. Ed, good morning, my friend.
Good morning.
Happy Belmont Stakes Day.
Thank you. I miss being there. I'm sure you do, too.
I know. It is so bizarre. Even this year, our coverage is going to be done much like NBC's doing on the TV side. We're going to be doing it remotely from our studios here in Lexington. Anthony Stabile will be on site at Belmont, and we'll be going to him for live hits. But it's definitely a different environment that we're all working in right now.
For sure. I've been fortunate enough to be able to be at the live races here in Louisville at Churchill. And, the wagering spends the same when you win and hurts when you lose, but certainly from a sort of live entertainment experience, I've really come to realize what fans at the track bring to the experience, to use the word again.
I guess we all have to count our blessings and consider ourselves fortunate here in the horse racing industry. This is a sport that, and I don't know if this gets enough headlines, but this is a sport that has continued to stay in business and continued to run races in many parts of the country during this entire pandemic when other sports were all shut down. And I think that's one of the blessings we have to be thankful for. And the other one, if you went back, Ed, 7 or 8 weeks ago and said, we're going to run the Belmont Stakes in June this year in 2020, a lot of people would have said, there's no way, you're crazy. New York is the epicenter of this pandemic. And all of a sudden, here we are, June 20th, and it's a card with six greatest stakes and the Belmont.
That's right, yeah, and I agree. Racing definitely hasn't, I don't think, gotten the attention it deserves, and sometimes be careful what you wish for with what that attention entails with certain media outlets. But nevertheless, really, Mike, not even sports, but all live entertainment. There's no theater, there's no live music, et cetera, and racing has gone on, and not only gone on, but business, at least handle-wise, is certainly doing well track to track. Indiana Grand put out a release. They had their best week ever handle-wise, and we know the tracks at the front end of this pandemic, they took advantage of the dollars out there with no other form of gambling. So, yeah, I agree. Thankful for people like us to tell racing story while the show goes on, and you're absolutely right that we have a Belmont today. Is it would have seemed impossible 2 months ago.
Well, every Thursday from 6 to 7 Eastern, you can be heard on this network with Anthony Stabile on the Brisnet.com call-in show, and that's a show we've been doing for many, many years now, and so many of our listeners appreciate the opportunity to call in and talk racing with you and Anthony. Big A pointed out to me that the summer solstice, the official start of summer, will be 5:44 Eastern time this afternoon. The Belmont is slated to go at 5:45. So for the first time in the history of the Belmont, it's going to be run in the summer and not the spring. Think about that.
Well, I know some people think the tides affect how horses run at like Delmar and Tampa. So if you think the tides can have an effect on a horse, then certainly the solstice might as well.
How do we handicap the solstice?
We say we've heard it all excuse-wise, but someone who finishes a hot and dirty six needs to come back and say, oh, the solstice got us.
I'm looking at my Brisnet past performances right now, and I don't see a rating on here for a solstice rating anywhere. Are we going to add
Small
one maybe by the time
size.
We get He's Ed DeRosa, the Duke of Degeneracy from Brisnet and Twin Spires, and he's here with me on the Horse Racing Radio Network. All right, Ed, where do we start? I'll let you kind of kick it off. We can go in order and look at the greatest stakes in order, or if you've got a couple of races you want to spend more time on, the floor is yours, my friend.
I'd say start with the big one, which not a lot of drama for my pick. I like you said, he's going to be a handful. Famous last words, but I just don't see how this horse loses this race unless it's one of those situations he will lose the race. No one else is winning. Something, you know, an awful, incomprehensible trip, stumble at the start like War Emblem. Any number of things can go wrong in a race, but if he brings what we saw in his two starts this year, I'm just going to have to be wrong, even at a short price.
Yeah, he looks like an absolute beast. And, you know, again, rewinding the clock several weeks here, if you look back at what this field could have been with Bob Baffert with his two contenders, and you had, Charlatan and Nadal, and then you had Maxfield, who was under consideration for the race but announced he was going to go to the Bluegrass, and unfortunately he's now completely off the Triple Crown trail with that injury. Tis the Law would have had his hands full with some of those other rivals. Now he comes here, and he's the big fish in the pond.
Yeah, and I know the Big A is probably disappointed some of those other names didn't show up. He's been a Tis the Law believer long before me, so I'm in a wedding funeral situation, really. But just I've tried to beat him, and he's earned my respect. Not that that's what he was out to do, but it's just really hard to ignore how he's looked. I do think underneath, I don't love Sol Volante or Tappet to win, or Pneumatic, who I know is kind of a wise guy vibe. So hopefully there's still some opportunity. I think one of the two Pletchers definitely will be underneath, and Max Player I think is kind of interesting. He just seems to like to plod along, and with the mile and an eighth, maybe he sticks around. But it's definitely Tis the Law on top for me and a big single.
All right, well, that's the Belmont Stakes. Again, 5:45 Eastern is the post. It's race 10 on the 12-race program. I guess let's work backwards then, Ed. Since we started there in race 10, we'll go to the race prior to it, which is all part of our coverage this afternoon. The Grade 1 Jiper, winning you're in for the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, and really a wide-open race where you can go a lot of different directions.
Yeah, for sure. I'd just like to say I'm hyper for the Jiper, so this is always a fun race, sort of a 6-furlong turf sprint, usually pretty much only at Belmont or Woodbine, I think. Now that Santa Anita got rid of the down the hill, usually we get 5 and 5.5. So makes it more fun. Hoping Pure Sensation takes some money off the layoff. Certainly one of the best turf sprinters around, but just think a chance to maybe go against off the layoff. And I landed on Stubborn, so not too much bigger of a price. But ships in for Doug O'Neill. This one's already had his tightener, ran, I thought, fine in the Daytona. Should improve second off the layoff. So Stubborn's for me in the Jiper.
Doug's best chance to win a race at Belmont today?
Oh, I would have to think so. If four is four left his? If that horse were to win, I'd be shocked. Off the top of my head, don't remember who else he has. But, yeah, I do like Stubborn's quite a bit.
Yeah, he looks like he could be tough in there. 3-1 on the morning line for Stubborn's. The race before the Jiper, the Grade 1 Acorns. We get 3 Grade 1s in succession. That's going to be cool. The Acorn Stakes is, if you look at the morning line odds, there's really only one horse to worry about.
Yeah, well, I'm worried about her, but I'm definitely going to try to beat her. I like Lucrezia quite a bit, cutting back in distance. Leperu ships in. So he's on this one, shipping in from Churchill, and I'm a big Julian fan, as Colin Show listeners know, or those who follow me on Twitter. Gamine, I think, is going to be tough, but at a short price, and, you know, I didn't think she looked a world beater in either of her two starts. Now, they both were wins. And certainly an open links win on debut always looks good. But, you know, the reality is the Brisnet speed ratings, Mike, are just as good as the rest, maybe a couple points higher. But, you know, in this spot, do I want 4-5 on a couple points higher or 9-2 on a horse who just needs to improve a little bit? I'm going to take the longer price.
What do we do with Perfect Alibi? I mean, you talk about the class of the field. She's been knocking heads with some heavy hitters throughout much of her career last year. What do we do with her now that she makes her three-year-old debut in this spot?
Yeah, I'm definitely a little nervous about exactly how fast she is, which isn't to say she can't improve from two to three. I mean, most horses do, especially we know Mark Cassie always has a good arsenal of two-year-olds, and many of them do go on at three. So it's a trainer you can trust to keep him in form, you know, during the break. But I've just seen handicapping these races throughout the year and really intently at Churchill. The higher the class, I really like seeing a race off the layoff with, you know, with all that's gone on. It just seems like, you know, at the $10,000 claiming level, you can come in and fire off the bench, or maybe in an allowance race, you're just better than the rest. But at the stakes level, anecdotally, I've noticed that having that tightener does seem to benefit. So Perfect Alibi, I'm going to watch one.
I'm going to plug my favorite feature of the Brisnet Pass performances. People have heard me talk about it multiple times on this program, but I love those late pace numbers that you offer. And Casual, 3-1 on the morning line for Steve Asmus, and I know it's just her third start, her stakes debut. She's perfect 2-for-2, and those late pace numbers, she can really motor home late. Do you give her a shot?
Yeah, she definitely, I think, well, I would not, I think. I know she's my second pick, and that's not to say, oh, I'm completely against Gamine in the try. Just as a multi-race player, Mike, I'm looking to identify the horses I most, you know, want to be live with and would be excited to get through the race with. And since I'm against Gamine, I'm certainly not going to use 3 or 4 in the obvious odds-on favorite. So Casual, for sure, is the next pick behind Lucrezia.
All right, so that takes care of the three Grade 1 races, 8, 9, and 10, the Acorn, the Jiper, and the Belmont. Let's rewind to race number 6, which is a Grade 3, the Grade 3 Wonder Again, 1 mile on the Wagner Turf Course. How'd you see that one?
I'm going to go against the advice I just gave, but, you know, turf a little different. But I do think Sweet Melania is just above and beyond these. And, you know, with it drawing the small field, it's not incredibly deep. I actually loved her in the Breeders' Cup, and she just, you know, got beat by Sharing, who was the next out winner as well. But I thought she ran well, was gritty, and Todd, certainly a trainer I have no issue off the layoff in general. So I agree with the morning line here and think she's going to be awfully tough.
All right, about a minute and a half before we have to get to our next segment, Ed, so I'll let you quickly touch on the Pennine Ridge and the Woody Stevens.
Yeah, Pennine Ridge, another, I mean, this Chad's even more prone than Todd to be able to fire with this type of horse. Who actually did get a race, though, this year and decorated in Bader, I would say, after Tis the Laws, maybe the most likely winner on the day for me. But I do like a little bit of a price, as much as you can have one in a five-horse field. And I would even say this is my best bet of the day from a who I'm excited to bet to win standpoint. I think No Parole wins the Woody Stevens. Obviously, the two-turn or stakes graded stakes experiment in the Rebel didn't work out. This horse came right back with a lifetime best Brisnet speed rating and its fifth career start, cutting back to the 6 furlongs. I definitely don't think 7 furlongs will be an issue, and No Parole is my best bet of the day.
Well, as I told our listeners earlier, 4 o'clock Eastern is when we kick it off with our undercard coverage presented by Breeders' Cup today, and then at 4:30, our network coverage of the Belmont Stakes presented by Twin Spires and Red Brand Fence. And Ed, can't thank you and the folks at Twin Spires enough for all your support of that broadcast and everything we do throughout the year. So I appreciate that. We'll tell people to head over to twinspires.com to sign up for an account, to bet the races, and to take advantage of that Belmont bet back, too. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a great offer. And real quick, want to encourage people to follow Twin Spires. We've been doing a lot more bet shares, and it's a lot of fun to root along on social media and watch the races together.
He's the best. Ed DeRosa, Duke of Degeneracy. I can say that. Duke, enjoy the day and good luck.
You too, man. We'll enjoy it as best we can from far away.
I appreciate it, buddy. That interview, like all of our interviews here on the show, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion on this Belmont Stakes Day by going to EmbraceTheRace.com. Time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf. When I come back, going to visit with the voice of the Triple Crown, Larry Colmus. His voice will be the voice you hear calling the races on our coverage and on television later today. Then our industry star of the week, David O'Rourke, the president and CEO of NYRA, comes up at 9 o'clock. Doug O'Neill, 9:20. Bobby Flay wrapping up the show with us at 9:40. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you by the Lexus Store of Lexington.
On September 27, 1947, over a distance of 1 1/4 miles out of the chute at the top of Belmont Park's backstretch, the long-awaited match race between Warren Wright's Armed and the King Ranch's Assault was about to unfold before an enormous throng on hand at the Grand Lady of Long Island as Belmont was off bemonikered. This was anticipated, expected, and billed to be, rightly so, I might add, a classic confrontation of the turf. The two owners, Warren Wright and Robert Kleberg, agreed that the $100,000 prize to go to the eventual victor would be given to charity, and it was a non-betting race. At Belmont, there was a bell which lifted its melancholy clang over the walking ring just before the horses for each race were to be filed out for the post parade. And just before this match race, it seemed to those in attendance to sound a sadder note than was usually the case. It was as a distant peal that may well have been of the self-same import of which Hemingway wrote, quote, "Ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee." A chill, brittle wind howled in from the northeast, bringing the starkness of the foreboding North Atlantic down across the 1,000 miles of ocean from the barren Arctic Circle. One of the horses responded to its sweep against his legs and through his mane and tail as he danced impatiently during the long parade to post for the start in the remote corner of Belmont's back stretch. That self-same wind brought no solace to the other combatant, for he was to run this race on courage alone to fulfill a promise that had been made and was herein to be honored. He was not the same marvelous thoroughbred he had been during a brilliant career on the racetrack. He was somewhat lame and sore, each step bringing a twinge of pain. His heart and mind told him of the task at hand, but his body throbbed in protest. Armed, the great handicap champion older horse, and Assault, the 1946 Triple Crown winner, went to the starting gate. Somehow in the gate, Armed nicked himself on one quarter and left a scratch that scattered blood and a spray on his legs as he ran, but he broke in front as the starter sent them on their way. As the two champions loped down the long, long run to the far turn, it was Armed by four open lengths, with still half a mile to run. Assault, under the highly capable, renowned Heady Eddie Arcaro, reached back for an attempt at one of those patented late charges, and through the next two furlongs he cut the gap to his rival to but a single length by the time they reached the quarter pole. As they straightened away for the final two-furlong run to the wire, it appeared to the roaring throng that Assault had put dead even with Armed. That was to be the last hurrah for the Clubfoot Comet, the great King Ranch standard-bearer. Assault had given it everything he had, but on this day, it was not enough. Arcaro, recognizing a lost cause, eased his mount up in the final 16th, and Armed cruised home a winner by eight open lengths in a final time of 2:02.4. Assault, the club-footed darling of the racing public, had been given it his all, but had for the last time faced a relentless challenge of the racetrack. After the race, while cooling out on the backstretch, his trainer, Max Hirsch, looked at the game champion and with a wistful look in his eyes said, quote, "There's never been another horse like him." An observer who had taken in that dramatic scene turned while leaving to glance back for one final look at Assault, who was standing with his big soft eyes blinking in the autumn twilight, and softly and fondly said, "So long, champ." It was indeed a great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus Store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus Store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus Store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation is a top 10 third crop sire by earnings, black type winners, and graded stakes winners. With nearly $7 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by six black type horses in 2019. From a second crop, three-year-old daughter Serengeti Empress won the 2019 Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks and was runner-up in both the Grade 1 Test and Acorn Stakes. Serengeti Empress finished the year with a strong third to older mares in the Breeders' Cup Distaff and is a finalist for Eclipse Champion three-year-old filly. By Distorted Humor, millionaire graded stakes winner Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
First crop two-year-olds by Airdrie Studs Upstart are the talk of the industry. At the OBS March sale, all six offered were sold for an average of $260,000, a spectacular return on his $10,000 stud fee. The $600,000 sale-topping colt out of Blue Burrow was one of two upstarts purchased by leading agent Mike Ryan, who said, "We won't find a better horse this year." Upstart has sired 101 first crop juveniles of 2020 and stands at Airdrie Stud for $10,000 stands and nurses. Think about it.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
American Pharoah has opened up a two-length lead as they come to the top of the stretch. And Frosted has moved up into second, and they're into the stretch. And American Pharoah makes his run for glory as they come into the final furlong. Frosted is second with 1/8 of a mile to go. American Pharoah's got a two-length lead. Frosted is all out at the 16th pole. And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I don't know what it is about that call. I don't know if it's because we were there broadcasting that race on radio or just hearing the excitement in Larry Culmas's voice, but something about it still gives me chills when I listen to it. Just a phenomenal job by Larry capturing the moment. The 37-year wait is over. It was no doubt one of Larry's top Belmont memories, and he's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the voice of racing on NBC, and this summer the voice of racing at Del Mar. That's going to be pretty cool. Larry, good morning, my friend.
How are you, man? How's everything going out there?
I'm good. Everything's good here. How's everything in the Empire State?
Well, it's different. I'm here at the hotel right now. I haven't made my way to the track yet, but obviously, this year's Belmont is going to be different in that, you know, there's not going to be the crowd and everything, but you kind of sense it's just not like it normally is, but it's still the Triple Crown, and I'm pretty fired up to get going today.
Yeah, 5 years since that call of American Pharoah winning the Triple Crown. When you hear that call, and I know you heard it a million times now, but when you hear that call and you think back on that day, what are some of the first things that come to mind?
Well, it was just, there was nothing like that day, and the whole week leading up to it was crazy, and I remember the night before the Belmont Stakes, we were here where I'm staying right now at the Garden City Hotel, and having dinner was with Tom Hammond and Donna Brothers. And at the next table, Penny Chenery was sitting, the owner of Secretariat. And she came up to us and she started talking to us. And I'm like, here I am the day before I'm going to, you know, call a horse going for the Triple Crown. And here's the owner of Secretariat. And I'm just thinking, you know, this is going to happen. This just, all the signs are leading that this is going to be the one. And from that time on, that whole day was almost like it was a blur, you know, because it was so, so great. And I just remembered when the race was over, and NBC caught Victor Espinoza with a couple of words I guess you didn't want on the air in celebration. I remember I said a little worse in the announcer's booth. I was totally overcome by what had happened. I'm like, did this just really happen? Am I dreaming this? But it was a surreal day, and today probably will be almost the exact opposite.
Yeah, and for very, very different reasons. Tell me about what's different this year. There's a lot of things different with your broadcast position and the way you're going to have to call this race and being a mile and an eighth race. Tell me about some of the things you're going to be dealing with.
Well, I'm going to be calling the race from the stands pretty much. The third floor of Belmont Park, Section 3K, right behind there's a platform, and that's where I'm standing. And it's a little lower view, but I called about four races yesterday just warming up, and it was fine. I didn't mind calling from that spot at all. You could see pretty well. So I'm looking forward to that. I was also wondering what it would sound like with no people. And I must say that some of the connections of the horses, the grooms, they're pretty loud when they're rooting the horses home. So it sounded like there was a crowd there because the few people that were allowed there were very vocal. So that was kind of cool to see. But it's going to be so different in that, when the horses go to the starting gate for the Belmont, normally they start right in front of the stands. The place is packed to the max. And the fans by that time of day, they've had a few cocktails usually too, and which helps. But the place is raucous. It just gets louder and louder as the horses go to the starting gate, which is right there. Now, this time, there is no crowd, so you won't hear any of that, and you won't see the starting gate there. It's at a mile and an eighth, which is at the top of the backstretch, at the end of the chute. And Randy Moss pointed this out yesterday at our meeting, that it is the farthest away starting point from the grandstand of any race in North America. Nothing starts farther away than this year's Belmont will. So that's the polar opposite of what it normally is. So there's going to be a few different things going on that'll make it interesting. But I think we're going to have fun nonetheless.
Yeah, and when you take a look at the field and some of the storylines that are associated with this year's field, there's certainly no shortage of storylines. And I know that this is different because the Belmont's run is the first leg for the first time in history, and the difference in distances and all that kind of stuff. But when you look at just the storylines, you take a connection like Tis the Law and Barkley Tag and Jack Knowlton looking to get that Belmont win after coming up short with Funnyside, 6-5 on the morning line. He certainly looks like the horse to beat. Todd Pletcher, Bill Mott, Linda Rice. The trainer side of things is loaded with storylines.
Yeah, Bill Mott is sitting on 5,000 wins. He's just one shy of that. Linda Rice would become the only female trainer to ever win any Triple Crown race. So, I mean, there's two great stories there. And, of course, the Tis the Law story is great. The Saratoga people who will be – I think I heard they're going to be at Pennell's up at Saratoga watching the race. And,
oh, cool.
With a good crowd of people, as many as they're allowed to have. And it should be a fun experience for them. It's the one race that Funnyside did not win. And I'm sure they would love to win the Belmont Stakes. And they sure look like he should win if he runs his race. He's the best horse.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Talking with Larry Colmus, again, you'll hear his call with us on the network broadcast of the Belmont Stakes in partnership with NBC Sports Audio. You'll also be able to catch him on television, of course, calling the races throughout the day. How many races will you call today, Larry?
I am going to call the ones that are on our broadcast window, which is races 6, 8, 9, and 10. So four races in all. We've got the Jiper, the Acorn, the Wonder Again, and the Belmont Stakes.
We started by talking about American Pharoah and how special that was for you because, of course, you got to call the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years. But look back on some other Belmont Stakes memories that you can share with us. What was the first Belmont you attended? What are some of the other moments that stand out to you?
The first Belmont I ever attended was Swale back in 1984. I remember going to the Belmont that year, taking a little drive up to New York from Maryland. I would have been 17, I think, at the time. I hadn't called my first race yet. I would call it a year later. So that was the first Belmont I ever went to. I remember going to watch AP Indy in the Belmont Stakes, and we had breakfast in the track kitchen in the morning, and Neil Drysdale was there. So that is something I certainly recall. You know, as far as the first one I ever called for NBC, my friend Kelly Breen won the race with Ruler on Ice, and yeah. So that was kind of cool. You know, it was you know, there's been several. Obviously, Pharaoh sticks out, and Justify would be number two behind him, having won the Triple Crown too. But you know, the Belmont. The day is always electric and exciting, and even though it'll be different this year, it'll still be just as exciting for me to call these great races.
How do you compare those two experiences, American Pharoah, Justify, both Triple Crowns, but very different experiences? How do you describe them?
You know, poor Justify. It wasn't his fault American Pharoah won the Triple Crown before he did. I mean, he did. He certainly took away a lot of, you know, the excitement by doing it 3 years before. But, you know, it was still fantastic. And, you know, Justify was undefeated and ended up that way, having never run again after that. But it was just, you know, it was one of those great feelings to be a part of history as always, but was it as exciting and electric as Pharaoh? No, because of Pharaoh, you know, because he had been the one that had ended that 37-year drought. So, you know, it takes nothing away from Justify. Like I said, it really wasn't his fault that it was already done a few years before him. And I'm sure the same thing with Seattle Slough when Secretariat won the Triple Crown and, of course, affirmed the year after that, everybody just thought it was too easy. They just do it every year, and then all of a sudden it never happened again for 37 years.
Yeah, you could almost argue that Justify's Triple Crown run was more impressive than American Pharoah, considering the fact that he didn't get started until his three-year-old season and ran through the litany of races undefeated.
It would have been nice to see him keep running. You know, it would have been fantastic to see what kind of horse he would have continued on to be. Because what we saw in the brief time that we saw him was spectacular. I mean, he was something special and just a huge, gorgeous horse to look at as well. So, you know, I'd like to one of these days get out over there and, you know, in Kentucky and see both of them. And we did that with Pharaoh, you know, but I haven't had a chance to see Justify. I know he's not as nice as Pharaoh, but it would be kind of cool.
As the horses go into the starting gate, right around 5:45 Eastern time this afternoon, Tis the Law, the heavy favorite. How focused will you be on Tis the Law when they're breaking from the gate and trying to keep an eye on everybody else too?
Yeah, you're going to focus a little more on him than everybody else. That's kind of how I normally would handle a, you know, a high level race like this, is to have just a bit more focus on the favorite in the race. You know, like leading up to the Kentucky Derby every year, there's always a favorite. You want to see how they come out of the gate, and I'll probably comment, you know, when they break, you know, that he had whatever start he had, you know, his smooth start, not smooth start, and then you know, then you just you look for everybody else, you know, and that's when Animal Kingdom, yeah, that was the first Belmont I called. Animal Kingdom had trouble at the start of the race, and luckily I had seen it because I was focusing solely on him and Shackelford, the Derby and the Preakness winner. And, you know, it was not that huge of a deal, but if you don't have your binoculars glued on him, you might not see it. And so I think it's important to pick up on those things.
How cool would it be if Luca Panici were to win the Belmont Stakes?
I know, right? He's such a great guy. I didn't realize that he and Frankie Dettori were like buddies from way back when. But Luca has been plying his trade in Florida for years. And, you know, not a guy that gets these opportunities. He rides horses that are generally not the quality of a Sole Volante, and especially in a Triple Crown race. There are very few people as nice as Luca Panici in this game. He's such a good guy and always fun to talk with. And I'm definitely, if that horse wins, Luca's name will definitely be mentioned, because he's such a good guy, and I'd love to see it happen. It would be great for the Reeves family too, the owners of Sole Volante, who are terrific people as well and gotten to be good friends.
Yeah, as a fellow wine enthusiast, I suggest that you suck up to Luca and give him a big call today if he does win. You know, he was telling me the other day that his family and he himself rode for the owners of Antinori Vineyards in Italy, and they make a wine, Sassicaia, which in 2015 was the number one wine in the world. And he rode and won races for that family, who was very involved with horse racing. So you might want to stay close to Luca Panici.
Yeah. In fact, the Sassicaia was the wine I remember that they gave Tom Durkett in his going away at Saratoga when they were giving him gifts in the winner's circle. So that's good to know. Maybe Luca can help me out with a bottle of that, too.
Yeah, just the 2015 vintage. The 2016 is undrinkable.
All.
Yeah. Larry, listen, appreciate the visit, my friend. Thanks for taking the time, and always good to hear your voice, and can't wait to hear it on our coverage later today and on NBC TV.
Absolutely, and let's have some fun today.
All right, enjoy it. Larry Colmus here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Looking forward to all that coming up later today. Should be a big, big day from Belmont Park. All right, one more break to get to in the first half of the program. When I come back, it's your Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Dor! Caraconti!
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti. A precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4 fifths, recording a 1:14 buyer speed figure. Caraconti possesses a strong Stormcat male line and hails from a top female family, which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. Caraconti's first crop of 3-year-olds includes Belmont Stakes contender Soleil Volante, winner of the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis Stakes earlier this season. Value priced at just $10,000, Caraconti gets the gold, according to Chris McGrath's Value Podium in the TDN. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Caraconti at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Isn't it great when things come together just right? Four Roses Small Batch brings together four of our 10 distinct bourbon recipes to achieve an award-winning bourbon with exceptional balance and a smoothness that's enjoyable neat, on the rocks, or as the foundation of a craft cocktail. Four Roses Small Batch, a perfectly balanced top-shelf staple. FourRosesBourbon.com. Be mellow. Be responsible.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
1 furlong to go, and Art Collector gliding through the stretch goes coast to coast and finishes full of run.
Art Collector, the 3-year-old son of Darley stallion Bernardini, earned a 100 buyer speed figure for that 6.5-length wire-to-wire allowance win, going 8.5 furlongs on the dirt at Churchill Downs. He has now won 3 in a row and will head to the Kentucky Derby Trail next in the Grade 2 Bluegrass Stakes here at Keeneland on July 11th. Art Collector is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley stallion Bernardini is the sire of 21 greatest stakes winners on dirt since 2015. Only Tappet and Curlin have more. Learn more about Bernardini and all the Darley stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Ette Indian on the inside, Chivalry to the outside. They've been trading blows for over 5 furlongs, and Chivalry is now up for a narrow lead. Ette Indian is there second. Jesus' team is a driven third. Soleil Volante warming to the task while fourth. Less than a quarter of a mile to go. Chivalry giving it to Indian all he wants. And Chivalry now has the lead down the center. Soleil Volante picking up his feet nicely. And here he comes now. 16th to go. Soleil Volante is over the top. And he's on to the front. Soleil Volante going away. Second was Jesus' team. Third was Chivalry. Ette Indian dueled into submission. He ended up fourth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, getting ready to wind down this first half of the program. Soleil Volante, a big win in an allowance race at Gulfstream. That was just 10 days ago, June 10th, going old school. He's back in the Belmont Stakes later this afternoon. Pete Aiello had the call for you there. Soleil Volante going to be ridden by 46-year-old Luca Panici, and Luca is going to be our industry star of the week on this Saturday morning, this segment presented by Stuart Morris. I'll tell you more about that in just a moment, right after I remind you that if you are looking for live streaming and for replays, and this is a great day to do it with Belmont Stakes Day, from nearly any racetrack out there, all you have to do is check out RTN.TV, the Racetrack Television Network. We have it in our studios here in Lexington. RTN has the most HD content of any streaming service and is available on many devices, including TVs, PCs, tablets, smartphones, Roku, and Amazon Fire TV. And as a special treat for all of our listeners, if you use the promo code capital HRRN, you're going to get 7 days of live streaming and replays absolutely free. It's all at RTN.TV. So go there today. Great day to do it with the Belmont Stakes coming up and all the great races around the country. RTN.TV and use promo code HRRN. Well, this is your industry star of the week. It is presented by Stuart Morris, and it's all about Luca Panici.
46-year-old Italian jockey Luca Panici was born to ride races, taking the reins from his father Vittorio Panici, who successfully rode in the 1970s. Luca was on the biggest roll of his career in 2020 when he got injured and temporarily lost his best two mounts, including Belmont Stakes contender Soleil Volante.
I think it's a part of the job. For a few years, I get lucky that I never have a big injury. I never stay beside. And this year, I started here pretty good because we started here pretty good, but they turn the luck, and sometimes when the jockey life happens, it's not the first time, and hopefully it's the last time, but it's a part of the job.
It was tough to watch his big horse finish second in the Tampa Bay Derby under Frenchman Florent Giroux, but Luca knows all the pitfalls of being a rider.
It's a part of the jockey life to be courageous, and every race you have to give the 100%. It doesn't matter what's happening before, what the future coming.
Luca has had good vibes with Soleil Volante from the first time he got on his back.
From the first day when he started breathe good, I know that it was a pretty special horse because he do the same way on the dirt work or grass work, gate work. He has a special mind. His brain is spectacular. And I like the way from the first day.
Owner Dean Reeves thinks Luca fits Soleil Volante like a glove, and the rider has become trainer Patrick Biancone's go-to jockey.
He has a close style. I fit really good from the first day, but I give a lot of merit of the horse and all the team behind the horse, because we never have to forget that all the team, they work every day hard for us. This kind of horse, and I'm glad that the people have confidence in me, and I fit the horse because I'm a good horse. I like the style that he has, and we know each other for almost a long time right now, and so there is no secret for us.
The importance of riding in his first American Triple Crown race is not lost on the rider.
Here, the Triple Crown are historical races, and I'm glad to be part of this game because it's a very, very big, there are a lot of people that are good horsemen, trainer, jockey, owners, breeder, and you know, to be part of one race of like that is just to be glad and thank all the people that they give me this opportunity.
Off a big win last Wednesday, Luca's confidence remains high going into today's Belmont Stakes.
Philip Volante show that doesn't matter first time he ran on the grass, the first time he ran on the dirt, the first time he ran on Tampa, first time 1 mile, one turn. I mean, every time that he ran for the first time any kind of distance or surface, he ran great. And so I'm pretty confident because he's a very smart horse that he can handle everything.
That's Luca Panici, our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. And don't forget that Stuart Morris offers a boutique, full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, his entire team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. Make sure you visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales this summer and fall. You know, Luca, not only riding in his first Triple Crown race this afternoon, but it's only the second time he's ever ridden at Belmont Park. He doesn't have to navigate that demanding mile-and-a-half distance where jockeys say you can get lost, but he will have to navigate the one-turn mile-and-an-eighth, and he does it with a very talented horse in Soleil Volante, the son of Gainsway stallion Caracanti. Good luck to our Industry Star of the Week, Luca Panici, later today. All right, busy second half of the program. I'm going to tell you all about it when I come back. That's hour number two right ahead, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's Ali Dar and Affirm battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Ali Dar on the outside driving. Affirmed and Ali Dar heads apart. Affirm's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
The Preakness winner, the Derby winner, 1-2 with the 16th left in the Belmont. Cancel, pull out, strike the gold. One last powerful thrust. Cancel! Holds on by a desperate head.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
With one furlong to go, Painter is still there. Smith imploring him for one more furlong. And here comes Union Rags unleashing a final furious rally to win the Belmont Stakes by a nose over Painter.
And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, my interviews with Ed DeRosa handicapping the stakes races at Belmont today, or with the voice of NBC, Larry Colmus, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and you can listen to the podcast at your leisure. All of our shows are available for you to listen to at horseracingradio.net. The poll question today, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and so many of you are continuing to weigh in. I appreciate that. Who is your pick to win today's Belmont Stakes? And we gave you four choices, three really, but Tis the Law, Soleil Volante, Tap It to Win, or Other. And if you choose Other, please specify. Well, a few people have chosen Other, and they have all specified Dr. Post will be the horse to win the Belmont. But the overwhelming favorite on the morning line and in the voting process so far is Tis the Law. 61% of the vote coming in saying Tis the Law will win the Belmont and move on to a race like the Kentucky Derby 11 weeks from today. Think about that. 11 weeks to the Kentucky Derby on September 5th. Of course, they'll have a start in between, maybe the Traverse Stakes, something like that in early August. But Tis the Law getting a lot of play right now in the voting and probably going to get a lot of play at the windows later this afternoon. Reminder that our coverage comes up 4 to 6 Eastern today. 4 to 4:30, undercard coverage, the Grade 1 Acorn. That's presented by Breeders' Cup. And then our exclusive coverage of the Belmont Stakes in partnership with NBC Sports comes your way, 4:30 Eastern. All of our affiliates are listed on the website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen on Sirius 219, XM 201. You can listen worldwide on our website with our free live streaming. a lot of ways to tune into the Belmont and coverage presented by Red Brand Fence and Twin Spires from 4:30 to 6 o'clock Eastern Time. Post time for the Belmont is 5:45. Well, nobody is happier to see this day arrive than NYRA President and CEO David O'Rourke. And earlier this week, David took time to sit down with our Anthony Stabile for an in-depth conversation about exactly what the folks at NYRA have had to go through to get to this point here today and what the future might hold.
It's been a long road back to live racing here at the New York Racing Association, and now with the signature race upon us. Talk about what it's been like to get racing back over the past 3 months.
Oh, you know, we stopped racing, I think it was March 15th was the last day, and then that week we had our first positive, so we canceled racing on the 19th, actually the day before New York pause. First off, it was, let's focus on the backstretch. We've got 600-700 people living back there. There's 1,500 or so horses. They're going to train. You know, horses aren't going into quarantine, obviously. So we, for a month, it was all about setting up protocols, getting PPE. I remember how hard that was.
It was impossible up here.
Yeah, so, you know, once we got through that and we're comfortable that we had the situation, for lack of a better way, putting it under control, it was, okay, well, how can you race without fans? Like, what the protocols need to look like? So we worked on that, and nobody really understood, and I don't even know if we still know exactly the magnitude of what's happening right now. So, you know, we focused on how do we get back to racing, because racing really, when you get down to it, if you're already training, the incremental, the same people for the most part. We got the state comfortable, and they gave us the green light to go on June 1st, and you know, June 3rd, we started racing here at Belmont without fans, and then... you know, we're going to have the Belmont Stakes, and it's going to be cool, but it's going to be a little weird. I mean, as you know, the horses coming down the stretch for that race, how loud this place gets. There's a lot of energy, and, you know, it's going to be quiet, and you know, but it's going to be one hell of a race. It's different, I mean, as you know, and it's going to be a mile and an eighth. It's one turn. The first race in the Triple Crown now for this year. It's unique, but this type of year, everything's upside down. So
let's talk about that for a minute. So the Kentucky Derby moves to the first Saturday in September. A little time later, the Preakness moves to the first Saturday in October. I think a lot of people were hoping there'd be...
It was more than a little time, actually.
Yeah. I think a lot of people were hoping for a traditional, more traditional Triple Crown series, maybe a fall Belmont, a fall Triple Crown series. What went into the thought process of running the race now as opposed to maybe in the fall?
So when Churchill came out with the Derby, obviously... you start to do the math, and you start looking, all right, where would the Belmont fall? And we were talking with our TV partner, NBC, the whole time. So you're looking in, you know, mid-October. I think it was October 10th off the top of my head, if I remember right. And then, as you know, the Breeders' Cup's in November, and it's a mile-and-a-half restricted three-year-old race late in the season. Pretty quickly, we thought if we could get up and racing, we'd like to try what we're doing. So it was, you know, there's a lot of... we'd have to take it to our racing committee and our board, because it's a big change, obviously, and it's a one-year thing. But instinctively, and even on paper, and in terms of the way the flow of the season and for the horses, it just made sense if we could do it, and we didn't know if we could. And, you know, luck have it. We got open in June. We're going to have the race. We adjusted the distance.
Talk about that a little bit. What went into that thought process?
I mean, a lot of that stuff, obviously, I rely on Martin, but... a mile and a half race at that point in the year with the preps that had been, it just seemed like a layup that this race needed to be shorter. And then with our configurations, the mile and the eighth is the right number for us to do right now. And, you know, even when you're talking about the Belmont for us, though, it's also the Travers and then the spacing to the Derby. So a lot of this was if we could get racing when we were hoping, we could play these out and keep these races spaced appropriately.
We hear the term new normal. Hear it a lot now.
Was there an old one?
Yeah, that's a great point. Make a great point. Yeah, and any place in the world was there a normal, especially at the racetrack, right? A lot of industries and businesses finding new ways to conduct business. You're a businessman. You run a racetrack. What have you taken away, and what do you think maybe the new normal is when the pandemic is finally behind us?
For the last few years... and you're a part of this. We've been focusing a lot on television and on the ADW side, because you could see the trends over the last decade, even further back. the channel shifting from OTB's brick and mortar to mobile. It was obvious, and it's been going on for quite a long time. This has accelerated it, obviously. The entire business right now is television and ADW. And it's a little bit of a glimpse of where we're going to possibly go. If you start to wager on your phone, it's so easy and convenient. Even if you're at the track, that's probably the mechanism that you're going to use for the most part. So we had been investing pretty heavily in TV and in our production capability and in hours with Fox. And we were set to have 500, 600, 700 hours this year. Thankfully, we've done that because it places us in a pretty good position to mitigate the losses on the other revenues that you'll see from the hospitality side. Belmont Day, there's 50 to 90,000 people here. That's a massive revenue line for us in terms of sustaining the business. And in Saratoga as well, it's even more important. So you have to adjust. You have to cut back. But luckily for us, we had positioned ourselves with the TV platform and the ADW where, there's growth in that area right now. So, you can't have a change like this in such a short period of time and then adjust your business to adopt it right away. But we had a few pieces moving in the right direction, and I think that's positioned as well. And I think we're going to learn quite a bit as we rely on them more heavily over through the summer.
Yeah, you talked about the hospitality. This would, in theory, would have been a very big weekend. Belmont Stakes, and then Father's Day on Saturday. I think a lot of people don't realize how big of a day Father's Day is. We have 20,000 people here on Father's Day. And then Saratoga. So it's come out over the last few days, went to the state to try to actually allow connections and owners in here for Belmont Stakes. But maybe a little too late in the game.
So New York obviously was the center of this. We were
crushing.
We got hit first. We got hit hard. And, our elected leaders did a great job of pulling it back and being very methodical about how they rolled out, one, closing down and then opening back up. And, people get frustrated with it, but it's working. And you can see it now across the country if you look at the numbers, the success that they've had with that approach. So when we were allowed to open, that was they were kind of being aggressive in terms of spectatorless sports. It was kind of outside of the protocol a little bit. We did set up a request to have owners here at Belmont, but we were running out of time, and you don't really want to push an envelope when you're dealing with something that, selfishly, I would love to have people here. From the owners, it's their, they're running in the Belmont. I mean, it's, of course they want to be here. But, we're all taking sacrifices, and at this point, there wasn't enough time to get it done. So we ended up just pulling the request, and we're really focusing on getting much more ahead of it for Saratoga so we can bring owners there. I mean, we've only been running for a few weeks here. So, we were being a little aggressive in our ask. We understood that. So hopefully in Saratoga we're going to have connections there, and we'll find out.
And really, in the grand scheme of things, we're fortunate enough to we're running the Belmont Stakes tomorrow. I mean, I think this is something that 3 months ago would have been such an alien thought. I don't think anybody could have dreamed that this was going to happen in June, that we were going to be able to run a Triple Crown race and actually get the Triple Crown started.
As you got to the end of May, and you start looking at our season and how we would have to start back up and what would be needed and timing for certain things, days started to turn into weeks. You're hoping for the phone call to say, yes, you guys could go. And now that we've gotten that, we need to do everything we can to adhere to every protocol. So, we're not increasing risk in the communities that we operate in. There's a lot to it. I mean, you come in here every day. Get your temperature checked. Check your ID. You got a face mask on. We're having everyone tested next week for going up to Saratoga.
It's
not next week. It's the 6th.
I usually drive Sterling in with me. At first, we thought it was our RQs, but then they told us it was our temperature check.
But you drive him in.
We come in together from the trip. So when they tell you 97.8, we figure it's our RQs. We didn't realize it was our temperature until the third day.
So you see it. You're here.
Every
there's
day.
Not a lot of people here, but there's a lot going on in terms of safety.
A lot of moving parts.
You can't even get into the basement because we pretty much quarantined it for the jocks. So, you know, we're applying those up into Saratoga. And, you know, as we move through this nightmare that everyone's gone through with this pandemic, if we can have some folks there, we're going to do that, and we've prepared plans for it.
You kind of have this job, for the lack of a better term, thrust upon you about 15 months ago.
Yep.
so much has gone on. Does it feel like you've been here 50? And you've been here about 13 years. Does it feel like you've been here 50 years at this point?
Oh, it's one different experience, I'll tell you that. You know, running a racetrack's unique, and there's so many different facets. And, you know, coming from the finance side and the wagering side, I was able to get involved with television with Tony coming in here. And now, as CEO, it's more broad, where ownership and, you know, there's other aspects that I really hadn't touched before. And, yeah, I didn't think I was going to check the box on the pandemic, but, you know, that's... you got to roll with it. And, you know, one thing about the folks involved in this game, they're resilient. They're tough.
Yeah, that first day that we had, we didn't have fans here. I actually was filling in for Johnny I, called a card, and it was probably my proudest moment in the game. And you and I had spoke briefly that afternoon walking in and walking out, and you kind of echoed those sentiments, like you were just about a year into the job at that point, just to see how everybody lifts each other up and helps each other out. Yeah.
Like, you know, when this first came down in March, the way everyone came together around the backstretch, it was amazing. Like, Humberto back there, I mean, that guy's a hero.
From the chaplains, yeah. Humberto, I mean, he's just the guys, the folks at the BCCA, the girls over at Best. I mean, just everybody, just that community never stopped. It just never stopped. It's really a remarkable thing, and you're juggling a lot of balls because you have the horses in the backstretch. Of course, you're trying to get back racing, and then of course we have the arena being built for the New York Islanders. Governor Cuomo shut down the construction. I believe it was March 25th or March 26th. They were a little ahead of schedule because we had such a great winter as far as weather concerns, less than 5 inches of snow before the pandemic. Any updates on the arena as far as you know?
As far as I understand, they're on schedule. I mean, they're going to be on schedule. You know, they got some of the best guys in the business building that, and they've worked closely with us, and they've been great. You're here every day. They're building. Do you even notice?
It's amazing. No. You just drive in and out, and it's literally business as usual, except for the moving parts as far as the health, to keep it on top of everybody's health. Yeah.
But as far as I understand, they're gonna hit their mark, and there'll be hockey over there next year.
Be a good thing, since they just closed the Coliseum down. They're gonna need the Islanders need a place to play.
It's gonna be beautiful too.
Yeah, from everything we've seen so far, it's been great. Done an amazing job here. Congratulations and good luck with the Belmont Stakes later on today. And thanks for some time.
Thanks, Anthony.
The Big A, Anthony Stabile, with David O'Rourke. My thanks to David for taking the time to sit down with Anthony, and thanks to Anthony for conducting that interview. Yeah, I mean, David O'Rourke, very candid, talking about the things that they've had to go through in order to get back to where they are today. And if you, I said this with Ed DeRosa earlier, if you had looked back 7 or 8 weeks ago and said, we're going to run the Belmont Stakes in June, people would have thought you were crazy with the way the situation was in New York. But somehow they found a way to get it done. Now, whether they're going to have fans at Saratoga, as you heard, still remains to be seen. They're hopeful that maybe that could be the case. But I don't know. I think it was announced this week that the U.S. Open at Bethpage Black was going to be conducted without fans, if I'm not mistaken. And if that's the case, that's kind of that same time frame as Saratoga. So if New York is not going to allow fans at the U.S. Open, you would have to think Saratoga could be a bit of a long shot. But that's just speculation on my part. I hope that they do get some fans in attendance and do it safely. But so far, they're navigating the waters pretty well at the New York Racing Association. All right, when I come back, I'm going to talk to trainer Doug O'Neill. He gets set to saddle long shot 4 left in today's Belmont Stakes. And then 9:40 Eastern, I'll talk with celebrity chef and Breeders' Cup ambassador, horse owner, Bobby Flay. Stay with me. It's the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire, Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Racing is back at Churchill Downs every Thursday through Sunday with a first post each day of 1 p.m. Eastern. Although spectator-free, Churchill Downs offers great wagering opportunities with big fields and horses coming from all over the country. The meet concludes Saturday, June 27th with a huge card highlighted by five graded stakes, including the Grade 2 Stephen Foster, a win in your end for the Breeders' Cup Classic, and the Grade 2 Fleur de Lis, with the winner punching her ticket to the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Visit ChurchillDowns.com for more information.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
I'll have another on the outside. Now it's moved into second. And then down toward the outside, Creative Cause. Bodie Meister holding on to the lead. I'll have another on the outside. It's closing in. I'll have another colors. Bodie Meister.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN, all presented by Woodbine Entertainment here in the month of June. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, awaiting Doug O'Neill. We are efforting Doug. Busy morning for him, no doubt, and we'll have him on with us here shortly. Looking forward to that visit as he gets set to send out long shot four left in this afternoon's Belmont Stakes. And many people, he's 30-1 on the morning line. Many people are going to look at him as a bit of a surprise if he wins. And I guess you could, but he has some early zip. The question is, can he clear and be able to carry that speed the distance, mile and an eighth here today? You know, you look back on his form when he's competed in Great Estates Company, hasn't necessarily been all that good, except for that race in Dubai last time out, where he was able to win the 2,000 guineas. And we'll see, you know, keep in mind, that was back on February 6th. We'll see if he can get back on track coming up in just a few hours, really. You think about it, 5:45 Eastern post time for the Belmont. Doug O'Neill is indeed with me now. Doug, good morning, my friend. Happy Belmont Day.
Oh, you too. Thank you, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great. Back in the Empire State again, my friend.
Oh, man, we're so pumped. Actually, we sent like a dozen out here a few weeks ago for the remainder of the meet and possibly Saratoga. So we're excited, and not only about today, but for the next few months in New York. So far, so good.
As we were coming back from the commercial break, of course I had to play I'll Have Another, winning the Derby and the Preakness, both of those stretch calls. And, you know, it brings back such great memories for me because I remember that run. And, you know, you and I talked many times. Jude was part of the team, and we were all talking about how good this horse was coming into the Belmont. And then, of course, the disappointment of having to scratch the day before. But, boy, that run really does bring back some unbelievable memories, and I know it must for you too.
Big time. And, you know, there's some similarities today with Four Left, you know, when Paul had mentioned I'll Have Another, you know, training so well, and we tried him in Bob Lewis after a little breather, a little freshening, and he got the job done there, and it really sprung us forward to that amazing run. So, you know, the Four Left thing today was kind of a last-minute audible call, and hopefully we got some fun, good results coming up today.
Yeah, what led you to put him in this spot and give him a try?
You know, we were just zeroed in on the Woody Stevens for, geez, the last month or so, and just that race is coming up extremely tough. You know, it's both the Woody Stevens and the Belmont are obviously grade ones, and they're coming up like it. And just started thinking the Mount 8th one turn might suit Four Left a little bit better, where, you know, early on it's not as as hectic the pace, and he's always trained like a horse that, you know, a little extra ground wouldn't be a problem. It was just the navigating the two turns. Sometimes he'd get a little eager, in a couple of two turn races that we tried him in. So I just think the long extended one turn's gonna suit him well, and his last couple of breathes on the Belmont surface have been great, and he's got a win over the track, so a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you talk about three-year-olds and their development from, say, February when we last saw Four Left to where we are here in the middle of June. It can be substantial mentally and physically, and he works like he's a really, really good horse. So what have you seen, what changes have you seen in him from February to now?
Yeah, I think a lot of mental maturity, and you're so right. You know, when you look at his numbers and his buyers from his two-year-old season, you know, they don't stack up with the other Belmont horses, but we're looking at a lot of the three-year-old form of these Belmont horses. So, yes, so often you see these horses really move forward. Their numbers really jump forward when they get into the three-year-old season. So, we're just seeing a horse that's filled out. He does things, in a more mature way. He doesn't waste energy like maybe he did at one time. So, we know we're 30 to 1 for a reason, but in our minds, he's got a big, big chance, and we're real optimistic he's going to give a good showing.
Did you expect that he'd be 30 to 1 when you were planning to enter him?
Yeah, kind of. You know, when Paul and I started talking about it a couple of days before entries, and I figured we're still going to probably be 8 or 10 or 15 to 1 in the, you know, a long shot into Woody Stevens as well. But I figured we wouldn't get a lot of attention. It's hard to, look at the two-year-old numbers and see where they're going to go. And then it's hard to gauge the win he had in Dubai. But that was an extremely impressive win. And, it was a large field as well. So we've got a lot of confidence in him. But I wouldn't blame others who haven't seen him in a while, show me first. So hopefully we're going to show him.
Well, you were able to lock in Jose Ortiz to give him a leg up later today, and that's one hell of a get right there, brother.
Well, you're right, and we had Javier Castellano, who's another just unbelievable rider. We had him work him for the Woody Stevens, and I felt terrible when we made the change and the change in races, and Javier had already committed to Farmington Road in the Belmont, so he was gone, and couldn't believe when Jose Ortiz was open. I was like, whoa, what a gift that is. So super excited about that, and excited about his post as well. And it's going to be a great run.
Yeah, and you get a chance the race before to maybe punch your ticket to the Breeders' Cup Sprint in the Grade 1 Jiper. Completely different scenario here. You have Stubbins, who is 3-1 on the morning line, so a lot of people thinking that this horse is a major player, and he certainly looks like it.
You know, he's a horse that's shown he can ship and carry his form, which is always a great thing. And, the 5 and 5.5s in Southern California, with the lack of a huge grass course, it can be really tight, and you just got to get really lucky to get good trips. And this horse is definitely, his last couple of races he's had a lot of horse and just hasn't had the cleanest of trips. So we're excited about a larger turf course, and hopefully more luck with trying to find the hole when Luis Saez asked him to run. So we're equally excited about him. He's training well, and again, a very evenly matched, very tough race. You got the Pure Sensation coming back in there. We know he's a hard knocking, almost $2 million earner that he is. So not going to be an easy race by any means, but we're excited about Stubbins.
Talking with trainer Doug O'Neill here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stubbins going in the Grade 1 Jiper. Of course, the Belmont Stakes, he'll be represented by Four Left, which is a term I know all too well when I'm on the golf course. So maybe I'm cheering for you from that perspective, Doug. I've said that so many times. I've been cheering the Belmont winner's name for years.
No, and that's where that comes from, too. That's Paul's got a golfing buddy that he he named it after him, because that's his tee shot. Is generally, they got to yell that out a lot. So.
You know, this has been such a crazy year with the pandemic and all the adjustments that many businesses, every business has had to make, and you are running your own business as a horse trainer. Talk about some of the things, Doug, that you've had to do differently to keep this ship rolling.
Whew, yeah, it's been a real, just a lot of juggling. And, thank God Paul and Zilla Redham have been able to continue moving forward, but I've had a lot of clients that's had to slow down, and some we've had to turn horses out to the farm until they got their businesses back up and going. So yeah, it's been a real challenging time, and I was so eager going into 2020. I just loved the whole idea of 2020. It's gonna be a great year, and man, it just seems like it's been one gut shot after another, but hopefully we're smoothing out here, and summertime was today, the first day of summer, right? Today or tomorrow?
Yeah. First day
so
today.
Hopefully summer's going to bring some constant sunshine, some good news for a lot of us and a lot of people out there, and hopefully look forward to a great day starting today at Belmont.
Yeah, it was pointed out to me earlier by Anthony Stabile, who works with us here on the network, that the summer solstice, the official start of summer, is 5:44 Eastern time. The Belmont runs at 5:45. So it's the first time the Belmont will ever run in the summer as opposed to the spring.
Wow. And see, that's good stuff. So we're making some lemonade here, Mike.
We're doing the best we can. Yeah. Doug, I know it's busy. I know you have a busy morning. Before I let you go, give me one little tidbit on how Be It, who goes at Santa Anita today in the Las Barrera Stakes.
You know, small field, got Umberto Rispoli, who's unbelievably little-known rider. A lot of people are going to know his name here real soon. Tough race, but he's a hard-knocking horse that, you know, hard helmet, lunch pail type of horse. Every time we lead him over there, he's going to have to step it up. But at a big price, I think he can run 1-2-3 today.
All right, there he is, Doug O'Neill. Yep. As good as it gets when it comes to getting horses ready for these big races. By the way, How Be It, for our Kentucky listeners, bred by the University of Kentucky. So that's cool, too. It would be nice to get a big win for them.
Go Wildcats, baby.
Go Cats. Doug, yes. Appreciate it, brother. Good luck today, and stay safe up there, bud.
All right, thanks a lot. Take care.
All right, Doug O'Neill here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. He's got a lot of things going on this morning, and my thanks to him for taking a little time. Four Left. Look, I'm not telling you that he really has any chance to win this race, but 30-1 is a big price on him if you're looking for a horse to maybe crack into the trifectas, knowing, you know, Doug's history in these big races, and maybe there's a chance that he could carry that speed. But that's going to be his long suit, is that early speed. Because, again, as I told you, I'm a big fan of the Briss late pace numbers and their past performances, and his late pace numbers do not stack up with this group. But Doug touched on that. His numbers as a two-year-old, not in the ballpark of being competitive with this group here today. But you're talking about a horse that's developed as a three-year-old, and I just have a feeling, it's just a gut feeling, that maybe Four Left sneaks into the tries and the supers somewhere here today at a big, big price in that one turn, mile and an eighth. All right, coming up next, celebrity chef, horse owner, Breeders' Cup ambassador, and New York native, Bobby Flay. Can't wait for that interview. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, and it's all presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Adena Springs homebred champion Macho Uno is a proven source of classic speed and a great stallion to start off young mares. Macho Uno's runners average $88,000, higher than the likes of Malibu Moon and More Than Ready. He's the sire of five Grade 1 winners and three classic horses, including multiple Grade 1 winning Sprinter and Miler Private Zone and Breeders' Cup Classic champion Mucho Macho Man, who is now North America's number one third crop sire, having produced this year's sensational Pegasus World Cup hero Mucho Gusto, along with Del Mar Grade 2 winner and Grade 1 place Mucho Unusual, stakes winner Mucho Amor, multiple graded placed Bellora, and $575,000 juvenile and TDN Rising Star Fortin Hill. Mucho Macho Man's juveniles average $122,000 at the OBS March sale, higher than Liam's Map, Hard Spun, and Uncle Mo. Macho Uno and Mucho Macho Man, standing the 2020 season for $10,000 at Adena Springs. Visit AdenaStallions.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Kirkwood Stables has a long and storied history of producing and selling winners at the highest level.
Alphabet Soup has scored a shocking upset.
Blue Pretty holds on to the Oaks.
From dead last to first, Tom's Ready and the Woody Stevens.
Cold Front goes up, grabs the front, and Cold Front wins it for the U.S.
But in the slop, it's Funny Duck by three.
Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup.
Kirkwood Stables, proven success. Visit KirkwoodStables.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Ruidoso Downs Racetrack and Casino continues its summer meet this weekend with the $1 million Ruidoso Futurity and $900,000 Ruidoso Derby. Don't miss your chance to watch and wager on the first leg of the Quarter Horse Triple Crown. You'll find a simulcast broadcast of Ruidoso Downs races along with free PPs at raceruidoso.com. Visit your favorite ADW provider to place your bet on quarter horse racing from the mountains of New Mexico. Ruidoso Downs Racetrack and Casino, home to the world's richest quarter horse race, the All-American Futurity. Guaranteed excitement? You bet.
Hi, I'm Kayla Stratt, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
All right, a little audio trouble there of Larry's call here for the Humana Distaff. Taking a look at it, though, we'll try to describe the action as best we can. We're looking at number six, that is Moonlit Stroll, making her way up the backstretch in front by about a half a length over Judy the Beauty, who will track her from the outside.
Yeah, Judy the Beauty in good position here. She's second to the outside. Thank you, Mary Lou. Back toward the rail is third. She's going to settle in three lengths off the lead. She's flanked by Dame Dorothy, the Bobby Flay-owned filly. Some celebrity representation here. She's fourth, placed outward from the rail. She's up within 3.5 lengths of the leader. Then a gap of 4 more lengths back to Sweet Reason, who travels along in the fifth spot, clearly confused, is in sixth. And You Bought Her is seventh as the field rounds the far turn. But up front, Moonlit Stroll, the long shot leader. Judy the Beauty travels in second, and then comes Dame Dorothy. Now, Dame Dorothy at the quarter pole, top of the home stretch. Dame Dorothy, Bobby Flay's filly, swinging to the far outside. She goes from third to second and is up now to challenge Judy the Beauty, the reigning champion female sprinter. Moonlit Stroll, the long shot, fights on, but third toward the inside. An incredible finish, a late run from Sweet Reason to fourth. Dame Dorothy has a head in front. Judy the Beauty is very game. Moonlit Stroll is third. Down to the line, it is Dame Dorothy prevailing by a head for owner Bobby Flay, trainer Todd Fletcher, and jockey Javier Castellano.
There are some unbelievable benefits of having a track announcer on your crew on this Derby Day coverage. Kurt Becker, amazing job. Hadn't even looked at a horse, picked up the binoculars and took them home. Just unbelievable.
I'm crying. It's like to watch that greatness is unbelievable. Fantastic job.
But appreciated, but 2 points. One, lucked out with a 7-horse field. And number two, thank goodness Bobby Flay has fluorescent orange silk.
Dame Dorothy, the winner.
Dame Dorothy, the winner for Bobby Flay. I don't typically like to make our guests wait all that long when we get them on the line, but I thought Bobby might enjoy hearing that from our 2015 broadcast of the Derby undercard, the Humana Distaff and Dame Dorothy's win. We went to the call, and there was a glitch in the audio. We had no audio, but thank goodness Kurt Becker was sitting next to me. He picked up the binoculars, hadn't looked at a horse, and it was just remarkable. Bobby, I bet you've never heard that version of that race before.
No. I was actually wondering, you know, how did I miss that one? That was the best yet.
Yeah,
I watched
unbelievable.
That race about 300 times.
I'm sure you have. What a day that was, huh?
Yeah, amazing. Just amazing. It was, you know, it was Derby Day. The Dame Dorothy, named after my late mom. It was just a great way to, you know, win a Grade One. That's for sure.
How special was Dame Dorothy? She could really run.
She's fastest horse I've ever owned for sure. I still have her. She's producing, really good racehorses. I mean, her first foal, ran second in the Devona Dale this year. Her name is Spice Is Nice. Actually, the Laws who bought her actually named her with me in mind, they say, naming her Spice Is Nice, which was really nice of them to do. And she kind of goes in and out of being on the Kentucky Oaks Trail, depending on when it's going to be run. And so it's nice to see her progeny start to show themselves as much as well as she was on the tracks too.
You know, you told me a few years ago when we sat down at the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale that your approach to this game when you got involved as an owner was to buy fillies as opposed to colts for the most part. Is that still the approach that you're taking, Bobby?
Yeah, it's 100% my approach. I mean, I like the breeding, you know, probably as much as the racing. And I always have an eye on, you know, well pedigreed fillies. And so now I have a broodmare band of about, I don't know, 8 or 9, you know, really great families. And so, you know, being able to produce fabulous foals from these bloodlines is, to me, it's all the fun. And you start actually creating, you know, your own families in thoroughbreds. And when I think about, you know, you think about like legacy and you think about like history and stuff like that. It's like when I see Dame Dorothy, you know, win a Grade One, and then she has progeny that can now seems like they can run too. And I have a daughter who's in her early 20s. And so like, I just think about, you know, Sophie breeding out of these, you know, the daughters and the granddaughters of these horses that, you know, we bought, you know, years and years ago. So that to me is the fun of this whole thing. I love the I love the pageantry of horse racing. Unfortunately, nobody can actually go to the races right now, but you know, I was actually watching Ascot before you called me, and you know, it's just, you know, we took a horse to Ascot in 2011 after we won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies race as a two-year-old, took her to the coronation. She didn't run that well, but it was an amazing time. You know, like my whole family went. You get dressed up, you make a week out of it, you're in Ascot, you hang out in London. I mean, you know, these horses can take you on amazing adventures that just enhance your life. And you know, those are the kind of memories that you'll have forever.
Yeah, for people that haven't heard, by the way, Sharing was running in the Coronation Stakes just a short time ago. She ran a great race, came up a little short. She's finished second in that race. But, boy, you talk about special fillies. There's another one, Bobby.
Yeah, oh, for sure. You mean Sharing?
Sharing, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She just ran really, really well. I just think that it was, you know, actually, Graham's daughter, Jane Motion, is good friends with my daughter. They're sort of running mates at the races. And I sent her a text. I was like, Daddy's on TV. And then she sent me a video of her taping her dad being on TV at Ascot. So it's like everybody's in tune. But I think that Sharon ran a fantastic race. Actually, I think that the horse that won had the better trip on the inside. It seems like the inside, you know, the inside at Ascot seems to be carrying them a little bit further.
Yeah, talking with Bobby Flay here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Bobby, you mentioned earlier that you can't go watch your horses race now. For the most part, at most racetracks, owners are still not allowed. They won't be allowed in for the Belmont Stakes today because of the COVID-19 situation. As an owner, as somebody who is so passionate about the game, how frustrating is that for you?
Well, I mean, I think I would speak for every owner that, you know,
yeah.
And you know, the reason why we get into this is because we want to go, hopefully go to the big races on the big days and see our horses compete. And so that's obviously disappointing. And then, you know, when you think about like my favorite place in the world, Saratoga, my favorite time at Saratoga isn't during the races. It's, you know, in the mornings. And, you know, again, get to see your horses, you know, breeze or gallop or whatever it is, just to kind of be in that environment. You know, I would, you know, every owner, that's really what we're looking for. And unfortunately, we can't have that. But we are lucky in the sense that we're one of the few sports that's actually competing. And so at least we have, you know, it's like I got excited about waking up this morning and knowing that I could watch Ascot and Belmont. Like, I'm not leaving my house, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I said that earlier that, you know, we're very fortunate. We have to count our blessings as an industry that for many tracks we've been able to keep this ball rolling through the pandemic where many other sports have had to shut down entirely. And I think that's – and if you said we were going to run the Belmont Stakes in June 7 or 8 weeks ago, people would have looked at you like you were crazy. But here we are,
no,
Belmont Stakes and several great stakes races.
Yeah, it's a little odd. A friend of mine asked me this morning, who doesn't really know anything about horse racing, they asked if this was going to always be the order of the Triple Crown. And I thought, well, I don't get to make those decisions, but I'm going to guess no. You know, this is hundreds of years of tradition that's been sort of, you know, turned on its head.
Yeah. And you know, Bobby, you're a New Yorker. You have been, you know, right there in New York where all of this has taken place. It was the epicenter of the pandemic and hit very, very hard. And now to be able to get back to some sense of normalcy, just a little bit, with running these races at Belmont Park and having a Belmont Stakes Day, just talk about what that means to the state, to the community, and to yourself personally.
Well, the Belmont Stakes is usually a big day for me, whether I had something running that day or not. I usually have about 30 people come to my house for breakfast because, well, I just want them to eat well that day. And I love Naira, but sometimes the food doesn't really, you know, make it. And so basically what happens is I have a tradition where I cook like a brunch that starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. It's usually, you know, about 30 people that come over. they're all dressed up in their Belmont wear, so to speak. And we candy cap, we watch the morning, whatever's on TV in terms of horse racing that morning. And then we put everybody in cars. Nobody's allowed to drive. We go to the track. We order a lot of wine and champagne all day long, and we drink. And then afterwards, we go to a steakhouse called Wolfgang's in New York City. And we have like a table of 30 right down the middle of the restaurant. And because we're so starving by the end of the day, and we eat this big steak dinner. It's a very New York experience. And a lot of the people, the people that come every year, I try to include, like a dozen people who've never been to a horse race before, which you would think that would be hard to do, but unfortunately it's not. And, because I want them to experience, the things that we understand as great race days. I want them to have those experiences so that they become fans of the sport in any way, shape, or form. They could just be a spectator. They can decide that they want to start betting on horses. It doesn't matter. It's like I always feel like it's my job as I try to be as much of an ambassador of the sport as I can be, because it's given me and my family so many great moments, and I want people to experience that.
Where did the love of horse racing begin for Bobby Flay?
Where does it begin?
Yeah. How did you get hooked on the sport? Where did that happen?
Oh, this is a story that you've heard many times from many people. My grandfather took me to Saratoga when I was like 15. And that was it. I think I've been to Saratoga every year since I was 15 years old, which is a long time ago now. It's 40 years ago. I may have missed maybe three meets, but other than that, it's on my calendar, period. My office knows that, like, when Saratoga happens, especially during sales week, like, it's off the grid.
Did your grandfather own horses, or was he just a horse player?
No, he was a horse. He was a total horse player. He knew everybody at the racetrack. You know, this is when horse racing was the sport, in New York. And, tons and tons of people would go every day, like on a Wednesday. And my grandfather was loved to gamble on horses. And, we always make this joke that his name was Willie Flay. And we used to make this joke that, like, he would step outside of his house and, like, look for one single cloud. And if he saw a cloud, he's like, it's not a beach day. We got to go to the races. because he just loved it so much. And
yeah,
then, there were all kinds of characters at the track then. And it was just a really interesting time. When I started going, Steve Coffin, I think, was an apprentice and winning, like, every race. And, he was a teenager. So as a young person watching somebody, basically a couple of years older than me, like, have all the success, like, I just bet on every Steve Coffin horse. That was sort of how I got started.
All right, let me ask you this question then. Considering this is Belmont Stakes Day, a favorite Belmont memory or two when you think about the Belmont Stakes, what are some of the things that come to mind?
Well, I had a piece of Creator in 2016, which was, it was surreal because, I don't even like to talk about it because I don't even feel like I deserve to say that I won the Belmont Stakes, but that's basically what happened. Creator, owned by Winstar. So the Wednesday before the race, so like literally four or five days out, I bought a piece of Creator. The people at Winstar were nice enough to let me buy into him. And then, like, all of a sudden it's Saturday and we have a runner in the Belmont Stakes and then he wins. And like, I didn't even have a chance to absorb the fact that I actually owned a piece of him. And then he won the race and then it was like, oh, you won the Belmont Stakes. I mean, to be like, I know, like, partnerships are really big now. And, you'll see, like, Justify had like 400, owners, and that's sort of the trend these days. Like, any good horse, all of a sudden, 10 different people buy into the horse. It's really not what I love to do. I like to kind of, you know, keep it, you know, keep my partnerships nice and small. And I asked Elliot Walden if it was a chance I could buy into Creator. It was just basically a big bet. I mean, that's really what it was. And he had won the Arkansas Derby, and then had a really bad trip in the Kentucky Derby, and I think he ran like 13th or 15th or something. So he was kind of out of everybody's, off everybody's page. But I knew that he had a lot of talent, and he was by Tappet and on and on and on. So, you know, when he won by a nose, first of all, like, best ride I've ever seen in a big race by Irad Ortiz. I mean, he literally won by an inch, and if you watch the race really carefully, you see him saving ground at every single possible moment to get up. If he misses it by an inch anywhere else, he doesn't win the race. I mean, it's just spectacular. But anyway, it was just one of those moments where, like, all of a sudden you're standing in the winner's circle with the Belmont Stakes Trophy as a native New Yorker. Like, I mean, what other race do you want to win other than that? Maybe the Travers, but I mean, it's the Belmont. So, amazing,
yeah,
moment.
What a memory. And, what a moment.
It was great. And, you know, my daughter was there and she cried, and that's good.
that's what this sport's all about. And Bobby Flay, you are what this sport is all about. You're a phenomenal ambassador, and I'd love to spend even more time with you up the road and hear some more stories and talk about some of the love of the game that you possess. But I'm coming up on the final commercial break of the program. Listen, really appreciate the visit here this morning. Enjoy the Belmont. Sorry you can't prepare that wonderful breakfast you prepare for everybody, but we'll get back to that at some point.
All right, man. Thanks so much for having me, and good luck today.
All right. Thanks, Bobby. Bobby Flay here on HRN. Back to wrap it up right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown.
Power.
Cara Conti has won.
Passion.
It's Cara Conti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Cara Conti at a door. Cara Conti.
Gainsway Stallion Cara Conti. A precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4/5, recording a 1:14 buyer speed figure. Cara Conti possesses a strong Stormcat male line and hails from a top female family, which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. Cara Conti's first crop of 3-year-olds includes Belmont Stakes contender Soleil Volante, winner of the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis Stakes earlier this season. Value priced at just $10,000, Cara Conti gets the gold, according to Chris McGrath's Value Podium in the TDN. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Cara Conti at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
This proven son of Giants Causeway has sired 4 millionaires, including Claiborne Farm stallion Lee. Recent top runners include Cutting Humor, winner of the Grade 3 Sunland Park Derby, Grade 2 winner Sharp Samurai, international star Shamal Nibras, graded stakes performers Uncapped and Sweet Sammy D, and Bal Harbor, runner-up in the Grade 1 Woodward Stakes. His 2-year-olds have brought prices up to $310,000. First Samurai, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Isn't it great when things come together just right? Four Roses Small Batch brings together 4 of our 10 distinct bourbon recipes to achieve an award-winning bourbon with exceptional balance and a smoothness that's enjoyable neat, on the rocks, or as the foundation of a craft cocktail. Four Roses Small Batch, a perfectly balanced top-shelf staple. FourRosesBourbon.com. Be mellow. Be responsible.
Racing fans, don't miss closing weekend at spectacular Santa Anita as our winter spring meeting will conclude on Sunday. Although there is still no public admittance, you can play the races by logging on to First Bet. That's the number one, stbet.com, or you can download it at the App Store. We will offer a total of 7 stakes over the weekend with the Grade 3 Lazaro Barrera, the Grade 3 Wilshire, and the $150,000 Snow Chief for California Breds, all taking center stage on Saturday. On Sunday, our traditional traditional closing day feature. The Grade 3 San Juan Campestrano at a mile and three quarters down the Camino Real Turf Course will headline a card that will also include the Grade 3 American at a mile on turf and two other stakes. And please note, with mandatory payouts in all exotic wagers, Sunday's 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot pool could approach $5 million. First post time on both Saturday and Sunday is at 12:30.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
My thanks to all of our guests for joining us here this morning. Ed DeRosa from Twin Spires and Briss, the voice of NBC Racing, Larry Colmus, David O'Rourke from NYRA, Doug O'Neill and Bobby Flay just moments ago. Been a really, really fun show. Don't forget, back this afternoon, 4 o'clock Eastern, with all of our Belmont coverage. Kicks off 4 o'clock with undercard coverage of the Acorn. And then 4:30, we segue into the network broadcast of the Belmont Stakes. Visit horseracingradio.net to check out a podcast of this program, to see affiliates all over the country for our coverage this afternoon, and to listen worldwide. You can do that with our streaming, horseracingradio.net. Thanks to everybody for listening here this morning and for weighing in on the poll question. For my producer, Lee Delapina, for Chauncey handling our social media, I'm Mike Penna. Go Steelers.